to the ANews podcast. This is episode 117. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian, anarchistnews.org.
Some recent anarchist, or at least anarchist-related, content has gotten me thinking about how I relate to symbols, history, and tactics. Specifically, these were the From Embers interview with Crime Think concerning the guillotine, and the PBS state-funded documentary, LOL I'm So Clever, on Emma Goldman. To first tackle From Embers, at one point Crime Think Guy uses the example of the guillotine to point to authoritarian means inevitably leading to authoritarian ends, and thus how we need proper anti-authoritarian symbols and tools to avoid this. I would like to push back against this, and perhaps show my hand as a member of the postmodern generation to say that I don't believe anything lives beyond or outside its context. By this I don't mean just a vague historical context, but the web of relations that people in a specific place and time have to something like a tactic, tool, or symbol. The example which immediately comes to mind is doxing, a lesson in how something advertised as anti-authoritarian, publicly shaming supposedly more powerful enemies, is in fact in today's context an appeal to authority. The authority of the boss if your enemy is fired, the authority of social media if shamed, and more generally, the authority of the public. But, perhaps, in another time, in a smaller world, this type of action, this type of shaming, was in fact the least authoritarian. I can imagine shaming the most fucked up man in the village until he acknowledges his mistake and is taken back into regular social life as a nice alternative to execution or exile. Which is to say that I prefer to treat ideas, tools, symbols, etc. as living, breathing, changing things rather than static ones to be denounced and avoided or accepted categorically. Next, I want to talk about the example of Emma Goldman, who is in fact dead. Yet many of the historians in the PBS documentary, and John Zerzan recently, wants to treat Emma as if she were alive today with the benefit of 100 years of hindsight. To treat her as merely a naive and foolish radical who should have known better than to not only support the Bolsheviks after being deported to Russia by the state, but also her support of a utopian idea called anarchism. Thankfully, this documentary pulls in Barry Pateman of the Kate Sharpley Library, who ends the entire documentary on this nice quote, "And she's awkward, and she's ornery, and she's a pain. Great." In other words, she was a human, she was flawed, but perhaps there is something other than her actual meat and bones that we can treat as living today, not as something to point to and say, aha, we know better than her, but as a spirit that we see carried through 100 years or maybe even 1,000. Whether you call this anarchy or something else, perhaps you can feel it pumping through your veins today, no matter how faint.
Dark and ponder how I'm fit to make the bottom fall to the floor, and they all fall down. Yeah. It goes.
What's new this week? Done in from within, an intemperate review by John Zerzan from Anon. A few ways to read this. One, a pretty naive reading of the enemy within, as in, oh, historical anarchist folks made mistakes or interpreted things differently and or without the benefit of hindsight. Therefore, we must guard vigorously against people who have a different line from us. Or, two, hero worship is not anarchist and everyone makes mistakes, so don't follow blindly. Or, three, no one is as good as Jay-Z is, so stop wasting your time with these other people when you can just follow his superior anarchist path. Or, you know, all of the above. It's sad for me that I trust Jay-Z's references and citations so little that I can only use his writings as examples of a mindset, more than anything I would rely on historically or philosophically. But perhaps that's cool. Perhaps that's the second message actually played out. Maybe this is all a Zen master's lesson to us all, just like the nihilism John suggests while he denies it.
On Subculture, from North Shore Counter Info, by Anon. Quote, "We are not dead. I am not dead. I am not old. The kids are all right. History is happening. Things are always changing. But if you think that the whole world was at its best when you were 21 and feeling excited about your newly minted adult life, you are not the only one. And you're probably not right." Unquote. Despite being old, I am thumbs up on this blog post. It is explicit about asking some questions and coming from some specific life experiences in a way that works for me and also reflects some of my questions and experiences. In fact, this is reminiscent of some of the questions in last week's editorial on A-News as social media. Parts of it do, however, imply an either-or that might be important to argue the point, but probably also makes the effective audience smaller, I think. Quote, 2019 isn't just extra political, it's extra connected in general. Just like social media serves us a quantitative increase in political discourse, but no increase in true engagement in social struggle, it serves us a huge increase in knowledge of and discussion with our real-life social networks, but no decrease in alienation, unquote. There are more useful ideas in here, including a list of practical suggestions. This is worth reading on your own, though, and it deserved more and better commentary than it got in this thread.
Writing for the Revolution, Novels, Nihilism, Nudity, from the Transmetropolitan Review. The person who wrote this knows how to write an intriguing headline. Not as well written as many previous pieces from this periodical, but the content is more appealing, at least to me. This wanders from Russia to Canada with Tolstoy as its focal point, touching on the Dukubers, Tolstoy's novels and life, his influence on nihilists, the experience of nihilists in Russia, the experience of Indians in Canada, Canadian statecraft, and some about Tolstoy's understanding of God and Christianity. It's nice to have more context for people like Nutshev and the power that storytelling has always had on people, perhaps young people in particular. Of course, writers do like to think about how powerful stories and storytelling are. Quote, the winter of 1901 was extremely rough on the Dukubers, but by spring they'd formed resilient villages along communal lines. Hoping they'd change, the Canadian government found the Dukubers committed to collective living, and in response, one of their ministers wrote, it will be necessary for the Dukubers to make individual homestead entries in accordance with the Dominion Lands Regulation. This development caused massive anger among the Dukubers, who spent the next year debating what to do. To them, individual property would cause their community to disintegrate, and they were encouraged in this belief by Tolstoy, who wrote to them, property means that which I consider my own. I will not give to anybody who wishes to take this thing of mine, but moreover, I will defend it against him. But to defense against another, that which I regard as my own, cannot be done except by violence. That is, if need be, by struggle, fighting, even killing. The teachings of Christianity cannot be taken piecemeal. It is all or nothing, unquote. Just a note, Canada is Canada because it's a state. The reason one cannot use an indigenous word for what is now Canada is because there was no Canada that used to be called something else. To say so-called Canada is to allude to something previous, perhaps a worthwhile reminder, but it also slides over the extreme differences of then and now, differences that are too jagged to be so slippery.
France, Burning Equipment and Reflections Against Those Who Make Use of It, from borderedbysilence.noblogs.org. An anti-work acknowledgement that the working class is mostly not on board with revolutionary ideas, and an argument that workers who are not for revolution are as bad as bosses and owners. Quote, beyond the role their activity plays for their class, the workforce retains their subjectivity and their power to act in all situations. Precisely where their power is found is also their responsibility. Those who resonate with these premises can begin to shift their gaze away from state and capital to see the countless ordinary responsible parties. Those who lock doors, who search bodies, who assign grades, who experiment in the laboratory, who drive across the country to sell soda, who automatically prescribe drugs, who sleep in their military uniform, who push their shopping cart, who drive a big rig, who go on ski trips, who install digital locks, who take the subway, who slink down the street, crawl in the office, come home from the factory, pour back beers, enslave their wives, eat in restaurants, follow fashion trends, who sleep like the dead, only to then swallow three coffees and start it all over again. 8 hours a day, 250 days a year for 40 years of life, unquote. This piece makes me wonder how many A-News readers actually sabotage their jobs and how we could all do more.
Italy, Declaration of Anarchist Comrades Silvia Ruggieri and Anna Beniamino on beginning a hunger strike in L'Aquila prison. Quote, there are prison conditions, whether in regular or special sections, that are worse than the ones in L'Aquila. This isn't a good reason for us not to oppose what they are imposing on us here. We will no longer eat the bread. On 29th of May, we will begin a hunger strike demanding to be transferred from this prison and the closure of this vile section. Signed, Sylvia and Anna. Updates to follow. Unquote.
Announcing the 2019 Toronto Anarchist Book Fair, September 28th. Quote, There will be space to explore anarchist history and ideas, as well as their application to grassroots organizing and ongoing struggles. The book fair will include workshops, info tables, booksellers, and social events. This is an accessible space that aims to center BIPOC and other marginalized voices, unquote. Their website has a tab for statements and policies listing the following. 1. Mission statement and land acknowledgement. 2. Accessibility policy. 3. Safer spaces policy. 4. Policy on supporting survivors and consent. The final paragraph on this last one says, quote, "We recognize that power and privilege are often rendered invisible to us by our upbringing and highly encourage participants to attend workshops that are challenging and that question your assumptions. All genders can be guilty of failing to acquire consent and can use their power to manipulate and coerce. None of us are immune from this, and all of us must work together to combat rape culture and abuses of power," unquote. I want a word like frenemy for the reaction of yes, no, yes, no, yes, no that I get when I read some of these.
Update on Eric's attack and situation from Support Eric King. This is a report on what prison life is like in the U.S. with all the petty crap, sabotage by guards, bullshit bureaucracy, and setups for violence from both guards and other prisoners. It is depressing and important information for anyone who knows someone in prison or who might go to prison themselves, i.e., all of us. Quote, "As soon as Eric informed them he would go back to the yard, the guards told him they decided to take him to the chow hall at a time that his unit does not eat. They took him to a caged area that had a very large man waiting for him in it. With the guards watching, this man began to question Eric about his anti-fascist tattoos and then attacked him. The whole week he was on the yard, no one asked about or noticed his tattoos. The lieutenant, on the other hand, made a big point to talk about them. Take that for what you will, but suddenly this man waiting for him was very curious about all of this. Eric doesn't remember defending himself, but it was a big blur, and he was told that he did. He said the guards let it happen for a bit. He estimates receiving and ducking about 20 punches. He wasn't seriously injured, but did sustain significant bruising and minor injuries across his whole body. It was nowhere near the beating he received at Florence by the guards," unquote. Write him.
New English edition of Orkanen, English translation The Hurricane, an anarchist newspaper from Copenhagen, Denmark, from orkanen.noblogs.org. Quote, "From experience, we know that an insurrectionary can come from anywhere, even if most people seem to be downright hostile to this disposition. For that reason, we are continuously trying to figure out how we can explain the whole chaotic, otherworldly, mysterious, and frightening sphere of rebellious anarchism. We hope that the articles in this edition can be of some assistance. Today, as anarchists, with all this shit happening in this world, it seems almost ridiculous to point out that the struggle for freedom from any and every form of oppression is crucial. Societies of cowardice are ruling this planet, and they have done so brutally and nefariously for centuries. It is not only the actual rulers, the representatives, kings, CEOs, and bureaucrats. We all carry the existing society on our shoulders until we step out of line and free ourselves from being so insanely out of touch with the possibilities of fulfilling the needs and desires of our own, as well as giving every other being the same possibilities," unquote. Aww. And the NoBlog site is working again, so you can download the whole thing.
Anarchism and Eugenics, An Unlikely Convergence, 1890 to 1940. The Oxford University Press says about this book, quote, "Provides a deeply textured account of the both acceptance of and opposition to eugenics within transnational anarchism, reveals the contingent nature of eugenics understandings in the labor movement and broader societies of five countries, renovates the historiography of both eugenics and anarchism, provides insight into the complex relationship between science and society, ethics and sexuality, and social and political change," unquote. Someone get a review copy of this and write it up. Even though this looks academic as fuck, I'm curious.
Subscribe to Anarcho Agony Aunts from LibCom Blogs. This is the second time that this YouTube program has been promoted on ANews, and I get it. Two pretty young women relax with each other and talk about people's intimate and scary concerns, like dating while drinking beer and being cute. It hits all these markers, like women, humor of a sort, dating and sex, propaganda, and did I mention cute? And so on. Very non-threatening. I do find it telling, though, that the same clip was used in both write-ups, namely the one about how to approach someone without being creepy. Like almost every hyphenation of anarchism ever, yes, we have said this before, the anarchism gets short shrift. This is much more about pretty standard feminism than it is about, for example, challenging the couple form, talking to each other about things they disagree about, talking about how feminism or identity politics of various sorts don't actually work in people's lives, you know, at least not all the time, etc. That said, there are far worse YouTubers you could watch, so there you are.
Audio and video, the final straw, 9th anniversary episode, 1 hour and 14 minutes. I personally think that Burst and William could do a yearly personal episode, because doing an anarchist project for a long time is worth talking about in itself. But maybe that's just me. This episode is personal and demonstrates what I would call the best of the Midwest, regardless of where North Carolina falls on the map. That is, these two do a better job of connecting practical and theoretical anarchy than any other left-leaning anarchist project I can think of, while at least attempting to be non-sectarian, which is refreshing. Too bad they don't like us better.
Anarchy Radio, May 24th, 2019. An hour. The boys, aka Jay-Z and Carl, host. After Jay-Z mentions the release of the Africa Nine from prison, he received a strange phone call from someone who lived in Philadelphia when the MOVE bombing occurred. And they clarify that it wasn't the mayor, but instead the state police that authorized said bombing, which is, like, important or something, I guess. They also take a moment to repeat the police's talking points from a documentary. Jay-Z then reads from his upcoming piece, When We Were Human, where he describes how recent anthropology and archaeology say that he is right about symbolic culture being Homo sapiens' original sin, just in case you were ever in doubt. Oh, also, they said the word fuck on accident.
From Embers, Guillotines, Vengeance, and Revolutionary Optimism, an hour. This is the first episode of this podcast that I, Dim, have listened to, and it is a strange one. A quote, comrade among comrades from CrimeThink, talks about the content and implications of the CrimeThink piece Against the Logic of the Guillotine, in the context of a May Day demonstration in Toronto, which involved a replica guillotine. The topics covered in this conversation were actually pretty interesting, from questioning the neutrality of tools, both literal and political, the statement that treating people as static categories simply makes politics a process of elimination, to the nature of pleasure and the possibility of changing desires. Where this episode really vexed me, though, is the way the CrimeThink person kept bringing it all back to the topic of revolutionary violence, that we need to have the proper political methods, symbols, and ideas now because they supposedly will be the signposts to a successful, quote, revolutionary situation, unquote. That we should want to change our slash others' behaviors and desires, not to possibly move differently in the world now, but so that we can be effective anti-authoritarians come the revolution, even though they also go on at length about how there is possibly no future, but we can make beautiful things now because hope or whatever.
Anarchy Bang, episode 6. Quote, early 20th century anarchists like Emma Goldman and Emile Armand yearned for a new sexual liberty. Polyamory, bisexuality, nudism, and fluid gender, if desired. This impulse did not come from a shallow hedonism, but from the understanding that sexual freedom is needed for so many decisions about our bodies and how we relate to one another. Why are these ideas so relevant 100 years later? Sex takes place in the utopian slash direct, individual slash communal space that includes our tendencies, greatest dreams, and biggest failures. Unquote.
Xbox One.
Day holds a promise.
Xbox
you
One.
You can waste it or spend it advancing yourself.
Xbox One.
Productive employee is a happy employee. Anyone can rise to high caste level. Your possibilities are infinite.
Topic of the week. Anarcho-humility or anarcho-defeat. I am not a man of action. My brief experience with anything resembling activism ended with the whimper of realizing my flame didn't burn quite as bright as those leading the march or drafting the petition. I didn't discover a mystic tome of nihilism and suddenly decide that all was lost and it was time for something new. Instead, I lost a fight with myself before it even began. I would never say my experience in anarchy is in any way typical, but I've heard others say anarchists are often the losers of activism, or perhaps just losers. The idea of a radical transformation of the world in any measure, let alone one that destroys something as foundational as modern society, as capital or the Anthropocene, is bashed and broken upon the enormity of this world dirt daily. This breaking is perhaps what leads people to give up anarchy, start a family, advance in their career, or escape to the woods. In other words, a bowing to inevitable defeat. Yet beyond the label of defeatism or escape, there is a strain of something that could be called anarchistic humility. A sense that the world, TM, is irreducibly large and complex, and we aren't actors on the world stage of anything resembling politics, but are, in fact, the small rodents running between the feet of dinosaurs. Perhaps this leads people to live smaller lives, to view the immediate relations they've made among anarchists not as comrades on the path to victory, but fellow survivors on a life raft. One with a better aesthetic than the boat over there. When were your anarchist ideals bashed against the rocks of reality? How did you deal with this defeat? Did it drive you down a different path towards a different type of project? Or did it double your resolve, make you realize you just weren't trying hard enough? Perhaps you reject this framing altogether and want to take this opportunity to call out the anarcho-defeatists who stand as a barrier along the glorious path to radical change. You decide. What name are we going by for this conversation?
Just call me Max.
Max.
Yes.
What do you think, Max?
Very provocative. Very provocative. A little snark at the end. Well, I guess I, in my time thinking about this topic of the week, I guess I can recount my tale of woe. I felt a familiarity with the narrative that the author was giving. Although I would say for me, it was less about me losing the flame when the people around me didn't, but more that it was the opposite. I would say that I kept my flame burning a little longer than everyone else. And
oh, that's interesting.
I was involved in a project. I would say that the first wave probably hit my small anarcho boat when I was involved in a project that fell apart around somebody who had been abusing his partner and had some bad interactions with other women in the project. And at that point, this project that I'd been involved in for a year and a half, roughly 2 years, no one wanted to do anything with it. People broke into essentially just friend groups that were not friends with everybody. And no one really wanted to do anything of what we'd been doing before. So I moved to a different city in part to continue to chase the dream. And that didn't work out either. And what it ended up resolving into was me basically going into smaller and smaller circles of people I knew less well and less well. And by the time that all wrapped up, I had whatever, the flame had been dampened.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think about this question a great deal in the context of the, what I call the 2008 generation. And this was the set of people who came together more or less around the RNC in Minneapolis and really represented the wave of quote-unquote insurrectionary anarchists in North America that have only recently sort of fallen apart, I would say, around the 2006 time frame. So they had a 8 to 10 year arc and, you know, included many wonderful people. And definitely in the course of this generation or this set of people's arc, you know, they produced quite a few books. They produced lots of really good writing. And they all more or less left, you know, on some level as a result of the transformation from the Obama period of time to the Trump period of time. And that sort of is enough to sort of for me, give me a wind for the sails for an argument for both for anarcho defeat. In other words, this idea that, you know, like it or not, a lot of our anarchist friends are to some greater or lesser extent motivated by the spirit of the day, right? And right now, you know, the spirit of North America is sort of like in reaction to, in relation to, connected to Donald Trump as president in the same way that you know, in 2008, the spirit, the conversation, et cetera, was all in the spirit of Obama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, it's pretty brutal. but it's real. And I guess it's interesting to me, because I was definitely on the edges of the, because I mean, whatever, I was on a whole different coast, on the edges of the whatever wave of insurrectionary anarchism on the West Coast and also through the Midwest. The East Coast was much quieter, I think, but yeah. Still inspired by that. And also, I think, riding the tailwinds of what's called the global justice movement.
Mm-hmm. The decade before, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we inherited a lot of whatever, the dying embers of a lot of those fights, like protesting the IMF World Bank, for example.
Well, so to go back to the question of this topic of the week, when were your anarchist ideals bashed against the rocks of reality? You know, I think that for me, to the extent to which I accepted anarchism as a way of expressing ideals, that crashed against reality a long time ago for me. But I guess I would say that that generation, that 2008 generation, you know, that I don't necessarily want to call the children of Obama, but I think that perhaps that was the last time I had any hope, you know, was in that set of people and those sets of experiences. And frankly, even the way that they frame them, you know, as much as I criticize Crime Think for other things, the way in which they did that great report back about the 2008 RNC event in their magazine Rolling Thunder, you know, I think it was a great way of framing what really was another loss as a victory. And it did seem to be articulate enough that that whole generation of kids or people, you know, really seemed to resonate and be on that same frequency.
Sure.
I would even go so far as to say that probably that was the last time where I thought a protest was worth having.
Around 2008.
And the Minneapolis RNC.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I guess I would agree with that. I mean, what did you... I guess to... Because this question is asked to us, what did you do with... the feeling that you had been, whatever, brought down to reality?
In 2016 or in that time period?
Yeah.
Well, you know, over that 8-year period, I mean, I saw the Antifa moment coming, you know, a year or two early, and it was clear to me that it was going to be a really severely anti-anarchist moment. And so I tried to cry out against it. But, you know, I just, when a social movement is turning one direction or another, I'm the kind of voice that they absolutely shut out. I mean, and, you know, that's been apparent, you know, by many examples since then. But there's just a sort of way in which I talk about whatever, my own experience or whatever, and it just doesn't resonate for, I'm not sure if it's a generational issue or if it's just like a way in which mass politics is played, even in the anarchist sense of the word, or I just don't have anything good to say, so I should just shut the fuck up.
Do you think that, I mean, do you see voices coming out of that are saying things similar to what you were saying or whatever, reflecting this idea of anarcho-humility, or do you think it's too soon?
Yeah, I think it's a little too soon. I've heard a couple whispers, but, you know, the bizarre thing about today is, you know, Shane Bauer, who's someone who I'd never heard of before, they wrote a book about Antifa, and Kevin Tucker just last week basically had a round robin Twitter session of all things where they talked about how I should be launched into outer space because I'm so fucked up. So I still feel like we have a little longer of reaction left before we sort of return to sanity.
Sure. That's probably true. Yeah, I mean, that kind of surprises me too. I mean, I don't think this is super connected to age, but I feel like there are people who I see who are still holding the flame that are, I don't know, have probably been doing this as long as I have or longer, and are whatever, are still like holding the torch.
What torch do you think they're holding?
I mean, well, I would say the idea of turning a loss into a victory, for example. I mean, and also just whatever, the torch of Antifa, I guess, which is a little sticky because that's not, they talk about Antifa and anarchy in the same breath, but I also feel like whatever, I feel like that has been kind of receding, especially as the alt-right has mostly vanished as a social actor.
Totally. I mean, the kind of people who say those sorts of things are the kind of people who spend a lot of time doing media for their projects. Mm-hmm. They end up being media personalities, and they, in fact, mm-hmm. spend all of their time talking to a set of people who are perhaps both Antifa and anarchists. But, you know, when we look at the mainstream media, when we look at how these conflicts play out, this is not an anarchist struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, this is a complicated reaction, I think, that people have to defeat in a way that people just move the goalpost to something more achievable. Yeah. And fighting the alt-right was a lot more achievable.
I mean, I guess I'd say it's an indictment of activism, but it's also a strength of activism. You know, activists always have something to do. And if you're a young person who has a lot of energy, who wants to frame conversations in terms of actions and ideas and talk about them as being different, then having a full complement of actions, that's a good idea. Lick stamps forever. But, I mean, I guess, you know, fundamentally, when I come to this topic of the week, I would not call myself an anarcho-defeatist. You know, I still find anarchy itself to be exciting. I perhaps no longer find the social milieu that calls itself anarchist to be particularly exciting, but I probably never did. Like, you know, to the extent to which I have a social circle, I would like to believe that it's several social circles, all who have a geographically oriented approach to anarchism. And and then it's not like a national program. It's not, you know, a set of do-gooders who are about to do their best.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a really good way to look at it. I guess I feel that too. But it's been a complicated thing because I think that definitely in my time since I crashed against the rocks of reality, I've gone through a lot of mixed feelings, including like, yeah, feeling like we lost, but also like not really defining what I'm doing like that anymore or reacting. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, and this is, you know, the strength and the weakness of doing such an explicit project, like a publishing project, is oftentimes whatever other drama is happening, I look at how many orders we're getting. And that that sort of is my measure, and that's a really different measure than other people might use to describe anarchism at all.
No, absolutely.
Well, thank you much for this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Leno Mabel. What's New was written mostly by Jackie and a bit by Dim, and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial was written by Dim. We thank Aragorn and Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anews.org and the Anarchist News IRC chat, linked on ANews.